Sada Akona Kamara, and welcome to Satsang with the Shambhala Center. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are divine. Good evening and welcome to Satsang. This is Shisao Kono Kamara. I am joined by Piela Yen. And someone told me today that I had to mention on air that it is my birthday. And there's really no place I'd rather spend it than on the air with you. Let's go ahead and get started. After we finish the actual protection, go ahead, stay in that space. I'm going to do something a little different tonight. So bear with me, okay? Take a nice deep breath. Call yourself forward. Mother, Father, God, that I am, through the great central sun hierarchy, through the office of the Christ, through the order of Melchizedek, I call upon Archangel Michael to bring the sapphire blue ray. Cut away, cut away, cut away anything in all of our four lower vehicles not emanating directly from our I Am presence. I now call on Archangel Zachiel, keeper of the violet flame. Blaze, blaze, blaze the violet flame through all of our four lower bodies. Transmute, transmute, transmute all the psychic debris Michael has cut free. I now bring forth the invincible ring pass knot and the mirror blue light of invisibility to completely surround each of us. And I call forth a shaft of pure Christ light to surround each one of us. And I ask that these shafts of light be brought to the center of the earth, where I call on Archangel Gabriel to seal them. And I ask that the legions of Michael completely surround each tube of light. And now I ask that our vibrations be raised high above the psychic and astral worlds to the highest realm of illumined truth we each can attain at this time. Now, Mother, Father, God, we place ourselves in service to you and to humanity. Piela Yen and I place ourselves in service to all those listening to this program. We ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted into our perceptions and that all else of the lower mind be kept out. And we ask that only that which is direct from you be permitted through us. And because we have asked this, we consider it so. So be it. Take a deep breath for me. I'm going to ask you just to sit with each one of these words that I'm going to place with you and just allow them to resonate within you. You are beginningless. You are endless. You are formless. You are single. You are being. You are knowledge. You are bliss. Om Shanti Shanti Shanti. Lovely. Take a nice deep breath. Beautiful. Hi, PLAN. You look well rested now. That looked good for you, yeah?
That was very nice. A lot of heart expansion.
Beautiful. All right. It seemed appropriate tonight to remind you of what you actually are in this time of chaos that everyone is moving through on personal and collective levels. I want to start tonight with something that an interchange that PLAN and I had before the program. I'm going to ask PLAN to ask the question that she asked, but you have to censor it. And then and then I will answer it the way I answered it. It's a good start to the show, though. So what did you ask me?
Well, should we? All right. Well, it started with the fact that we were talking about what's going on right now with everyone. And I had mentioned that everyone is messed up right now. And you said that...
Should I say what I said?
Yeah, go ahead. Okay.
So she said this, and I said, well, you know, everybody always has been. It's just becoming more obvious now. And then, that's the truth of the matter. Okay. The ego, the lower mind, the personality, however we want to label it, is crazy. It's absolutely crazy because it was built on a faulty presumption. And just that alone created this this pattern in consciousness that is absolutely insane. It's absolutely insane. Right? Yeah. So the question is, you know, oh, so you asked me another question based on that, yeah, before?
Yes, because my thing was, what happen that people are just now starting to, like, if everything has always been crazy like this, what happened that people are all of a sudden now realizing, or things that are coming up, like, what's different, basically?
Right. And so my answer was, as it usually is, rather disappointing in its brevity. And my answer was, because it's time. And really, that's it. And I was speaking to PLAN about this just a few minutes ago and showing her that this entire construct, one thing that you have to move into an understanding of is that the entire construct of the fallen mind, which is the four lower bodies, it is the ego, it's the external reality that you're experiencing, all of it, you know, is divinely orchestrated, right? So there's no personal I that's doing anything. It's just that because of the identification that consciousness got kind of trapped in, it functions under this faulty sense that I'm a doer, right? But what's really happening, and if you study astrology, if you study numerology, you would see it, that everything is perfectly orchestrated. There's nothing that's coincidence going on here. There's nothing that is accident going on here. Ever. Ever, ever, ever. It just can't happen. It just can't happen. The accidents don't exist within perfection. Right? And that's what God is. Absolute perfection. So, you know, if you look at astrology right now, and you follow any of the good astrologers who are... on YouTube and all, you will see that this has been coming for a while and it's been ramping up. I think it was October of 2013 with one of the astrologers followed it back with certain moons, and I think the new moons, And the pattern got put in place then in 2013 that led to right now, and we're having this cardinal cross going on, and with the Aries new moon, it was like everything was ramping up to this point. And that's why we have seen everything ramping up. It's no mistake. You know, the what you have to realize is that all of those planets have an effect on everything here, because first of all, we're all interconnected. Okay, there's nothing that exists outside of you, and you are interconnected and interdependent with all of it. And those planets aren't, you know, piles of rock or, you know, clouds of gas. They are consciousness, just as you are consciousness. And they are highly evolved, highly, highly evolved forms of consciousness. Something that maybe someday you will have the opportunity to be yourself, you know, a planet. Uh-huh. So she looked at me like, oh, that might not be so bad. So all of these things, you know, they interact with each other, right? Just as you are a unique individuation of the rays of light, so are each one of the planets. And each one has its own, you know, frequency, right? And so they interact with each other. They interact with Earth. They interact with us, all of it. And so what's happening now, it has been in the workings for a very, very long time. And it just wasn't time until now for people to really start to wake up to how, you know, crazy the world actually is, you know, how off balance and off kilter it is. And before, it was always that way. It's just that it was easier to hide things back then. I mean, let's look at just what has happened since the mass movement of the internet. You know, I mean, you can't hide anything anymore. Everything is out there. Everything is out there, right? And it didn't used to be that way. I mean, think about how easy it was to hide things before there were even telephones, right? You know, I mean, people could barely communicate. So it's time. It's absolutely time. And it's time now for the deepest levels of collective pain to really come up to be looked at. The thing that holds the construct in place is the fact that collectively we've been in denial of our collective pain. And when you're in denial about something and you refuse to look at it, it holds it in place. That's where the power is. It's in your own action of non-action, right? But once you look at it, once you bring it to light, it just doesn't have the power to hold anymore like it did. Now, it can still maintain a certain amount depending on how willing you are to really look at it, right? And to dissolve it out. But it'll never be what it was before it was actually seen. See what I'm saying? And that's an important thing to know right now. So I was given a push earlier to share a Rumi quote with you tonight that I put it on Facebook. So if you follow our Facebook page, you will have already read it, I'm sure. But it's perfect, I think, for right now, because so many people are experiencing this on many levels. And I think that this is just a beautiful thing to get you to sit in and understand that this has its place. Okay. So Rumi said, "Sorrow prepares you for joy. It violently sweeps everything out of your house so that new joy can find space to enter. It shakes the yellow leaves from the bough of your heart so that fresh green leaves can grow in their place. It pulls up the rotten roots so that new roots hidden beneath have room to grow. Whatever sorrow shakes from your heart, far better things will take their place." And that is so beautiful to me. I will say that as a guide and teacher, I am witnessing in my sphere of influence just an unbelievable amount of pain coming up right now. You know, just like everybody that I'm working with is experiencing some of their core stuff really, really, really coming up. And some of them, you know, it's been something where they have been in a space where they haven't wanted to look at things for many, many, many years, and it's being forced on them now. to look at through outer circumstances. Others are feeling the inner pull to look deeper at things that have been going on, where they've had indications that point to deeper levels of pain, and they're taking that opportunity to now go into it and actually experience it. Okay, question.
Can I ask, this actually came up while you were talking, just so I can clarify for people, because you're actually talking about it now, how you were saying how if you don't look at it, it will manifest in the physical.
Yes.
Can you give an example for people of like how it can actually manifest in the physical if they don't look at it?
Okay, so I'm going to be careful with that because I don't want to put expectation into people's heads so they're projecting out that, oh my gosh, if I don't do this, that's going to happen, right? Because that's exactly what mind would do with that. But what I will say is this, you have an opportunity, everybody does. Things will come, you know, remember, it's all God, right? And so literally, if you detached from the personal self and just walked around in your world experiencing everything as God, you would understand and see very clearly that God is always communicating with you. And what God is communicating most of the time is the things that need to be looked at, right? We don't see it because we see it as a separate person who has their own issues. And we see that, you know, whatever, they have an issue with me, blah, 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 blah. And then we get defensive and then we get self-righteous. We go into all this stuff. So we don't see the messages that are coming our way all the time. So for someone who is really committed to doing their inner work, they pay attention to what people say to them, right? Because if there is, remember last week I spoke about emotion. And if there's the slightest bit of emotion attached to something that someone says to you and you feel an emotion there, that means there's an identification that's going on there and you're experiencing resistance to what's happening, right? So it's something that is hidden from you, or you wouldn't be experiencing the negative emotion that you're experiencing. It's hidden, okay? It's unconscious. So the side of it that you can experience is the conscious side that you have consciously chosen to hold on to, and then the side that you have been pushing into the unconscious mind is the one you don't want to witness as yourself. So you see it in the other person, and then you blame them for being that, but you can't see that it's actually you that is that, and you aren't willing to recognize it. Now, if you're in a space where you can go in and start to look at these things very objectively, and that's what it takes. You have to be very objective. Remember, I told you all in the beginning, you know, call on the objective observer, ask that be formed for you, because that is the key piece to doing this work. You cannot do this work unless you can be objective about yourself. All right. It's also personal. But until you can pull back and view your personality as something completely outside of yourself, you can't really get in to see what is there to see, because you'll hide it from yourself. Okay, that's why people can't do the work by themselves, is because without a guide who is capable of holding that space, of being that kind of objective, right, you can't see it yourself. Mind is far too subtle and far too tricky. It'll always spin you. Even if you start, you're onto something, it'll always kind of pull you out of it and make you go in a different direction. All right. So that is the opportunity. If the opportunity continues to come, and say it's through, you know, initially it's messages you're getting from something you got in the mail or something you see on the TV or something a neighbor says to you or whatever, and you see it, but you are like, no, you know, and you just kind of push it away and you move on. Okay, it's going to continue to come back, right? So spirit's always sending you another opportunity. Well, at a certain point, it's kind of like, you know, I guess for some people, it just takes, you know, kind of getting hit over the head by a 2x4 to finally get the message, right? So if you, you know, of course, you don't look at it because there's fear attached to it. There's always fear attached to something that we perceive will be painful. Yeah. And so remember that the initial experience of consciousness when it perceived its own separation was an extremely deep, deep pain. And so because the lower mind was born out of that pain, it doesn't want to go back into it. So it works very hard to stay outside of that state. So it really takes someone very courageous, you know, to go in and look and be willing to see the things that aren't pretty about themselves. And everybody has them. You have to have all of it, right? Because all of it is here and you are all of it. So you have to see it within yourself. After a certain amount of time, it's kind of like spirit says, you know, okay, so enough is enough. Obviously, we've given you enough chances to do it the right way or the easy way even. And now we have to bring it to you in a way that you can't miss it. And that's where in your outside world, you really can experience something. And it will be something that will hit home hard enough that it can bring you to your knees. I mean, literally. So it could be anything from like the loss of a job, the loss of a loved one, a marriage that ends, an accident that happens, you know, whatever it is. But it'll be something that's going to hit home for you. It'll be very specific to you, right? So let's say that you're someone who's always done very well financially and you kind of pride yourself on being that person who's really astute with money and, you know, all this stuff. Well, maybe for you, it's going to be something catastrophic happening. You say, you know, you invested with a bank that went under or you lose your job and can't find another, like, because that's what would hit hard for you, right? For another person who lives paycheck to paycheck, that wouldn't be as big of a deal, right? It would have to be something else for them. So, you know, this is where now is the time, especially as we see all of this stuff ramping up in the world. Now is the time, if there ever was one, to really start doing your spiritual practice, you know, because there's no time to lose anymore. What we're looking at is the dissolution of the inner and the outer worlds. Okay, the inner and the outer worlds are the same thing, but you can't see it. And at some point, everybody will have the experience of recognizing that the inner dialogue and the outer dialogue are the exact same thing. There's no difference. None. And that's very hard to wrap your head around because it seems like, you know, thoughts that go on in your own head and what you're experiencing out there are completely different things, and they actually aren't at all. Not at all. It is the same thing. But what you can't see as yourself gets projected out there, right? So you have to see it. I mean, that's why it happens. Remember that while this paradigm can serve as a cage, right? And that's the thing with, you know, reincarnation and karma, the way it works and everything, is people are like, oh my gosh, like you're trapped here. Yeah, you're trapped here. But the key to the cage is here in the paradigm. And it's being presented to you all day long, every day. You just have to be in a space where you can begin to recognize that, oh, that's a key, right? That'll open another gate. You know, there's an opportunity to open another gate, and there's an opportunity to open another gate, and you can walk yourself out of the labyrinth of this reality. But until you're at that place where you're really willing to start doing that and stop playing the victim in your world, you know, you won't get anywhere. Now, people get really hung up on, you know, if you tell them that you play a victim, no one likes to hear that, but it's the truth, okay? Remember, that's what the ego was born out of, a state of victimhood. It was cast out. Take it to the biblical sense, you know, being cast out of Eden. That's exactly what we're looking at. The story of the garden is fantastic, right? Not from a literal place. From a metaphorical place, it's fantastic because it's exactly what happened. You know, within the illumined state of non-polarization, that is the garden. It's heaven. It's perfection. Yeah. And then the original sin was the identification with the separate self, that there could be a me and a you, that there could be a good and a bad. And that was the, you know, eating of the fruit of the tree of the knowledge of good and evil. That's duality, good and evil. Okay? And when that happened, what happened? Right? They recognized what? They recognized they were naked. I love the story. And then they were ashamed of themselves. Oh, that's good, isn't it? Because what happened to consciousness when it perceived its own separation? It went into deep shame, very, very deep shame. Very deep shame. And then it was cast out of the garden, because in that experience, it completely lost sight of what it was, what it is, because you haven't actually gone anywhere. Just your experience is a little different now because of these faulty beliefs. But you still are God. And I love this. I just wrote a blog that I put up on the Shambhala Center website. And I put a link there on Facebook, too, if you want to read the blog. Because we have our blog up now, so I'm doing the blog thing now. So I wrote one today about sacred relationship. You know, what is sacred relationship? Because this is something that collectively we have to move back into. Because it is anything but sacred right now, the way relationships are. And, wait a minute. I completely just lost what I was going to say. It was something I wrote in the blog that was germane to what I was saying. What was I saying before I said something about the blog? Adam and Eve and the garden.
And relates to our experience.
See, this is very bad. When you get two people together who have gone through extreme levels of dissolution, we can't hold a thought for more than a second. Hysterical. Oh my word. Okay.
Maybe you should skim the article.
She's been saying, and I'll just, you know, this is a waste of time, but that's okay. She's been saying since the first show, I'm just waiting for the time when both of us start laughing and we can't stop. We may be just about there. Oh my. See, your spiritual work is supposed to be fun. For as painful as it can feel, laughter is always on the other side. And isn't that what Rumi was saying, that sorrow prepares you for joy? Because after a certain level of dissolution, everything is very joyous in your world. You know, remember the point of it all. If it's too scary for you to contemplate the thought of walking off the life-death cycle, that's okay. You can leave that bit. It won't stop it from happening, but you can not focus on that. Focus on the fact that what you're doing in taking steps to go into pain, to taking steps to going into the beliefs and the unmet needs that sit underneath them, is that on the other side of it is your heart. And that heart is constantly expanding. It is full of joy and peace and the most beautiful states of awareness. And that's what we're working toward. That's the point. Okay. The point is to stop functioning from a space where fear rules your motivation for everything that you do, or almost everything that you do, and to move into a state where you're detached from that fear that is erroneous. And you see things clearly, right? And remember that what we do here is we superimpose the unreal over the top of what is real. That's what the personality does. So there's something, remember my story about the snake and the adept, it's perfect. And that's what the personality does. It takes something that is one thing, and because of your the former experience and all the stuff that's been stored in your memory banks, you actually will project out your own interpretation of what's going on there, and you end up with a reality that is completely different from what is. And what is divine. But your reality that you're walking based on your own perception, which is coming from the personal self, is the polar opposite of that. That's why I always said, if there's a hell, it's got to be here. I knew that from the time I was tiny. I mean, I was a little kid. I remember thinking that in church, because it seems like something came up about hell. And I was like, but this must be hell, right? Because it is. And we carry that knowledge. Oh, and I was going to mention that. That did trigger something for me. When we talked before the program about why is it that people are getting it now? And I said, because it's time, right? Mm-hmm. I was also reminding PLAN, because she said to me, she said, but I always knew, right? And she could recognize that I always knew that it was crazy here. And I'm like, but that's because you came here in service, you know? So for those of us and, you know, more than likely anybody listening to the program, you as well, for those of us who came here in service from other systems of worlds that were higher dimensional, we came in knowing that we would be veiled, okay? That being born here meant you would be veiled. But we also knew that we would walk out. And the point of it was that in our own process of walking out, that we would then pave the way for the people who were part of the root races of Earth and then those laggard souls that the people from Earth took on. Because they're the ones who right now are just starting their awakening process. They're the ones who couldn't see it before, right? Because it's been too entrenched for too long. And, you know, and some of the, there's just multitudes of levels of things going on. Just even the children being born now, they're coming in, they're so fresh. Many of them have never even been born here, period. And so consciousness with them is in a completely different space, right? And just that act alone of them being present here, not being able to even speak, doesn't matter because they're holding a quotient of light that is greatly impacting the collective, you know? So that there are different levels of work being done, certainly. But this is the great work, right? As Ramtha would say, the great work. And the great work is to walk out of the belief that you're separate. And it's important to keep in mind, you know, it just came to me. Yay, from the blog. There it is. We had to take the long trip. Okay, so in the blog, I mentioned that I hear a lot of people refer to, when they say you're divine, I hear them refer to people as like sparks of God. And that kind of irks me, when not in a bad way, you know what I mean? But because it's incorrect, because if you think of a spark, what does a spark do, right? A spark like flies away from its source. Well, that's exactly what y'all experienced. And that's what led you to this place. You are not a spark of God, okay? You are a emanation of God. Think of that. So if you think of a picture of, I can think of one right now. Like there's a very famous rendering of Yeshua. And he's standing there, and you can see his aura around him. And it's just this golden light emanating from him. And that light isn't separate from him, right? It's an extension of him, right? That's what you are. You are an extension of God, an extension of the divine. You aren't a spark of it. Nothing ever separated you from it, right? But if you take, the power outlet is over there and I need power here. So I get an extension cord and I plug it in there. And now it brings the power from there to here. You see what I'm saying? And so you're like that extension cord. You're not separate from the power. If you were separate from it, you wouldn't have any power running through you. Right? You have to be part of it in order for it to work. Okay, so you are part of it. You've never, ever, ever been separated from that which you are, which is the source, prime creator, God, whatever you want to call it, energy, light, consciousness, whatever you want to call it. It doesn't matter. It's all the same thing. That is a really, really key piece. If there's one thing that I'd have you walk away tonight with an understanding of, it would be that, right? Your actions don't make you divine. You are divine, right? And now we're moving to a place where we are coming more and more into the space where our actions will begin to reflect the divinity that we are, instead of reflecting the faulty belief of what we're not, which is what happens right now. Because people love to say words, you know, words are great. Of course, they're polarized. Words are great. And I could tell you I love you and that you mean the world to me, you know, and then tomorrow you could do something that I don't like and I could slap you across the face, right? Is that an action of love? I don't think so. First of all, have an understanding that it is a universal no-no to strike anybody. It's a good thing for people to know. That's one of those biggies. You just don't do it. You don't do it. Very, very, very karmically binding. But you see what I'm saying? So we'll go back to another one of the beautiful quotes that Tona Reyes gave me very early on, and that is that human love is predicated on behavior. It's a perfect statement. It means that as long as you're doing what I think you should do and the way I think you should do it, I will love you. Or I will experience love for you. And that the moment that you step outside of that, I won't anymore. Because your behavior is what makes the difference. It's not the words, it's the behavior. And there's truth in that, right? Because words only mean so much. But you're going to show me where you're at by how you act. Because you can't hide that. Right. You can tell me you love me, but if you're, a billion different things that someone could do that would show you that they really don't love you in the sense of what divine love is, certainly. Maybe they love you to the extent that they're capable of loving in this moment, right? But that's not coming from the divine nature of them. All right. So that's the biggie for tonight. Remember that you are God. See, I think that throws people. It seems so overwhelmingly big. I'm God, right? And then, of course, so many people would get really hung up on the, oh, you know what's really funny? So we live in Charlotte, North Carolina, right? And there's a program here called Bob and Sherry on the radio. And I remember years ago, hearing on the radio something that they had. They were talking about some person. I don't know. He was some famous person. But they were interviewing him or something. And he had said that there was something his father had told him, like when he was young, and that it had made like a big impact on him. And he really kind of lived from that place. And what his dad had told him was that you are God. So his thing was, I am God. And I remember listening to Bob and Sherry just, you know, picking on the guy. Because their concept of that was, you know, oh my, like, how conceited is that, right? I'm God, give me a break, right? And here I heard it, and I was like, woohoo, go for you. You know, like, that's fantastic. But, of course, the world won't see it that way. Because what are we taught? You know, we're taught that, first of all, if you're Christian, you're taught that there was only one Son of God, right? And even he wasn't actually God. He was the Son of God. And that's it, right? That's it. Now we all have to kind of try to live up to that, but know that if we screw up, we're going to go burn in hell. So much for the forgiveness factor, right? So to say I am God is very difficult. Now it's easier now because, you know, there's been a lot of consciousness expansion happening over the last, since the 80s especially. But even since the turn of the into the 20th century, you know, with theosophy and all of that, a lot happened. A lot happened in the beginning of the 1900s. But it's still a little weird. So a lot of people get a little hung up on that whole thing. I am God. Like, what does that mean? Like, so I should be able to move mountains and, you know, and it just feels too overwhelming. So think of it this way. You're an individuation of the all that is. You emanate from the all that is. But it's also within the all that is. Because there's nothing outside of it. Everything is God. There's nothing outside of it. And that one concept alone, when you really get that, it will change the way you view everything, right? Just everything. And that's the one thing religion has not taught. Well, I can't say just religion. Well, I'll look specifically at Christianity since we're dealing with a Western audience here, because that's basically what we're talking about. Even Judaism, same thing. It hasn't taught that the only thing that exists is God and that you have your being inside of that. You know, you live and have your being within God. you know, it's a little, it can be a little difficult to wrap yourself around, because if you take it from the space of, you know, wow, like the universe, you can't even wrap your head around how big that is, and that exists within God. And then there's the multiverse and dimensions upon dimensions and multiverses within the dimensions. It's like, wah! It's like going to a quantum physics seminar. It'll hurt your head, but that's good. Do your work until it hurts your head. And you know, that is very good. The reason that your head will start to hurt is because it's creating a threshold. It doesn't want you to move past it. And she's shaking her head because she knows that feeling. What was it for how long? It was like the first month you worked with me. What did you say to me before?
Yeah, I had a headache for a month straight.
Now everybody's going to be like, they're going to turn their thing off. Never mind. I don't want it that bad. Oh, that's great. She did too. Yep, she had a headache for a month straight because the ego is so resistant to going in and looking. You know, and the reality of it is that there's nothing to be afraid of, because the only thing you got, well, you know, like JFK said, wasn't it JFK? The only thing we have to fear is fear itself. It's true. Because it doesn't have any power of its own. The only power it has is the power that you're giving it by being afraid of it. So you just have to face it, you know. All those things that were hurtful and painful that you never, ever wanted to look at again, it's time to look at them. And time to really look at them and see what really happened, you know, because you may even find that your own perception of what happened maybe wasn't even all that accurate. Why is that funny?
Because how you see it was never accurate. Never is.
Oh, so accurate within your own perception, not accurate from someone else's perception, right? More than likely. If you have a perception of something that's happening between you and another person, their perception is going to be completely different, of course. And what you can't see is the funny thing, and it actually is very funny, is you can't see that you're both having the same exact experience. So even though you think you're on different sides of an argument, you're having the same exact experience. No one ever has a different experience, because there's only one experience to have, right? That's it. The program is the program. And the program doesn't have, like I said, it's not conscious. It's just on autopilot. It just does what it does. But if there's nobody paying attention to the program, it has no life. I told one of my students this week that now is a great time to stop looking at people as being people. You know, it's a great time to really just look at everyone as a computer program. Or better yet, if you're a Battlestar Galactica fan, look at them as Cylons. Because that's the reality of it. That's what the personal self is. It is a program. A program that was constructed out of a false set of beliefs. It was constructed out of unmet needs. The unmet needs that you experience lead to your beliefs. And then what you do is you take a belief and you hold one side of that belief, and the polarized opposite of that belief also gets imprinted in your unconscious mind. So you are holding both, one that you're aware of, one that you're not aware of. But at a level, you are aware, aren't you? Because judgment comes. When the belief is challenged, judgment comes. Why does judgment come? Because you know that it's true and you don't want to face it and you don't want to look at it. So we'll take someone who is completely identified with being kind. Mostly being nice, right? Really identified with being nice and really opposed to people who are mean. This is very basic and this is a very simple way to see it. the unmet need for the person may have been they didn't have someone who was nice in their world, and there was a need for nice, right? So what they did was they took on the belief that nice was good and mean was bad, right? If they had mean and didn't like it, they're going to believe that the opposite is better, right? I mean, that just, that stands to reason. That's basic reasoning. So they take that on for themselves. And now what they do is they are identified with being a nice person. They work very hard to be nice all the time. They have moments where they aren't nice, but they'll be able to justify it. And they'll say that, well, but he deserved that. That's why I did that, right? And then that makes it okay. But as soon as they see someone who's not nice, they're the first person to step up and be like, oh, look at that person. He's mean. And the reason that comes, the judgment comes, is because they know that on some level, because, you know, mind is holding all of it. It knows everything. It's all there. And on some level, it recognizes, ooh, that's getting a little too close to home. The way that guy just acted is a little too close to this part of me that I don't want to look at. I don't want to think that it could actually exist because it hurt me, right? You see that? The person had mean and it hurt. So they needed nice because nice felt better. So then they make themselves into something that's nice and they'll push away the mean part because they don't want to feel the pain. But mind knows all of it. And that's why judgment comes. And the judgment comes to support the belief. And then justifiers for the judgment come to make you feel okay about sitting in judgment. Because we're taught that judgment's bad. You shouldn't judge other people. That's right out of the Bible, right? Well, it's true. It's absolutely true. But people aren't capable of sitting in non-judgment. They judge all the time, and then they feel bad when they do. So if they can come up with the justifier for why they judged, well, now I don't have to feel guilty. It's like an Irish Catholic who, you know, drinks all week and goes to church, and then he does his Hail Marys, and now he feels absolved, right? And I only use that example because my husband's from Syracuse. There were a lot of Irish Catholics he knew that went out drinking all week and did exactly the same thing. Don't take offense if you're Irish Catholic. But it's the same thing, right? You have something that says, okay, so if you do this, okay, we'll let it go. Well, that's what a justifier is. The justifier allows one to sit in judgment and not feel the guilt that if they really looked at what they were saying, they would feel. Because, you know, inside, you know, your conscience knows. Your conscience is divine. And if you saw some person walking down the street and he was extremely overweight and looked very dirty and whatever, and you found yourself in your head going, oh, he's a fat pig, right? On some level, something in there recognizes that that's not okay, right? So the justifiers come because we don't want to listen to the little voice that says, you know, that's not okay. But now is the time where we have to listen to the voice that says, you know, that's not okay. Your morality is divine. That's not man-made. You know, your morals are divine. There is, life is meant to be sacred. And it's meant to be viewed as sacred. And the people in your life are meant to be viewed as sacred and treated accordingly. That's why I wrote that blog about sacred relationship, because that's not how it functions here. And it needs to start functioning that way. That means that, you know, when you have a relationship with someone, whether it be just a friendship or an intimate relationship, that you have a responsibility to honor and cherish that person. And not to use that person as your personal punching bag. You know, because of their actions, their behaviors. Their behaviors come because there's nothing else they're capable of doing. The program is the program, and it takes an awful lot to start to walk out of that program. most people still have their veils are completely down and they can't see any of it. And that's where compassion comes in. You know, the compassion of the Buddha comes from that place where you can witness someone's, you know, who's functioning with their veils completely down. And there's an innocence in that. You can't blame someone for doing something if they don't know any better, right? And that's humanity. Right now, humanity doesn't know any better than to do what it's doing. And it's up to us, those of us who are ready to do this, it's up to us to really start leading the way. And we will do that by example. You know, we will take right action in the world. People won't understand it. At some point, they'll understand it. So some of our right action may look harsh. It may look cold. It may look all kinds of things to people because they're only going to see what they need to see in it, right? The reflection of themselves. But it's our responsibility to function from divine love, right? Are we good? Now? Yeah? Okay. So we're going to go into our closing meditation for the evening. It's a beautiful song. And let's just drift on this one. I don't think there's anything we have to do. We'll let Spirit do what it needs to do for this one. Thank you so much for being with us, as always. Our love to you, and we'll see you next week. Good night. Ashutya Keshava Shri Radha Madhava Jaya Jaya Vrindavaneshvari Ashutya Keshava Shri Radha Madhava. You are divine.